Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
You know, I think there should be a framework to the menu date. And I said, what do you mean? She goes, well, maybe you should say they have to be born after FDR died and before JFK died. Right? So get into that band there.
Right.
So, I remember, like, so it was yesterday, the first time.
That's Ryan between 1944 right. and 1963.
Right. So I remember.
He died in 45. Okay.
Remember, like, it was yesterday when Brian and I were dating, the first time he was separated from his wallet, and I'm in it looking at the driver's license. Got it by 1 year.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Every time Tori is on the show, she says something, and you go, wow, how great is this? We are live. We're live while we're doing this. You're not hearing it while we're doing it because it drops at 11 Eastern and 8 o'clock Pacific time in the morning.
Plausibly alive, yeah, as you're listening to
we
it.
We are yes. at Chatter on a very rainy morning, wondering if the walls are going to explode yeah. with rain.
Hatches.
As I've seen before, we're at the corner of Wisconsin Avenue and Jennifer Street Northwest, a block from the Maryland District Line. We're in the capital of the United States of America. With Gene McManus and Gary Braun and Michael Kornheiser. Nigel will do the news and run the board. We are guest loaded today.
Yes.
We will have Ann Hornaday. We will have John Heilemann. We will have Andy Beyer with a Kentucky Derby preview. We're very grateful to the people that have come in this miserable weather to have breakfast. We do serve breakfast here starting at 8 o'clock. And the socialite is here. And that means if anything goes wrong in the building, I can say socialite. Can we fix this, and can we fix it quickly? And Nancy is here as well. So there's a way to begin this show as we normally would do with sports, and I will. But before that, I just want, I know I speak for everybody here and for almost everybody in this city. I was watching, because I'm a Channel 4 guy, I was watching the Channel 4 news last night. I got home at about, I don't know, 6:30 or something like that, and went to Channel 4 because I was concerned about the weather. And so I'm watching the news, and at the end of the news, when the four people are sitting around, Jim Vance looks into the camera, and he says, you may have noticed that I haven't been around lately. And I really hadn't paid much attention to that, because throughout all the years that I've been in Washington since 1979, Jim Vance has been on Channel 4. And I know him a little. I like him a lot. I think I speak for a lot of people who feel that way. And he announced that he was being treated for cancer. He was not specific. And by the way, you don't even have to do that if you don't want to, but he did. He didn't say what specific kind, but he looked robust and he looked hale and he looked and sounded very optimistic about it. And I know that I join with everybody who's listening to me who knows him in Washington, D.C., and wishing him the best, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, because he's...
I mean, he and Doreen are my family.
Yeah, they're great. They're great. And there was, you know, this wasn't one of those tearful things. This was... Right. You know, I mean, you take your strength from the person who's making this announcement. And as I say, Jim Vance looked great and sounded great about that. So we say that. And also, I have to thank a little. I got this. Well, Michael, you actually got this. This is the sign guy. This is fabulous, right? This is wonderful.
We have sign news?
We have sign news.
Is this about people outside spinning signs?
Matt Ambrosiak.
That would be big news.
Matt Ambrosiak.
Breaking sign news stinger.
This is sign news. I've been a little for 20 years. I've always wanted to email, but I don't have the email chops to write something as funny as the littles who appear regularly in the mailbag. But I'm a little who works for a company that may be able to assist you with your Chatter signage needs. And we have significant signage needs yes. out front. I work for a Canadian company that's been in the trade show signage and logistics business for 50 years. We produce custom fabricated signs and trade show booths in-house. If there is a specific type of sign you're looking to have produced, we can create a free rendering with pricing that will be agreeable for you, Mr. Tony, as well as the socialite Gary Williams and any of the management team for Chatter. This would also allow me to make my first appearance at Chatter to watch the show, which is on my spring-summer plans, along with going to Boston to view Bob Ryan's podcast
nice.
That Bob does
oh,
with Bobby
that?
Snyder every Wednesday. So this is wonderful. This is a very
That's great news.
Because as you know, I would like to take the sign out front, and I would
yeah.
Like
well,
to
the
get
sign
rid of
is driving you crazy, and I already saw you talk to the socialite about it this morning.
I want to get rid of the sign.
Right. You would rather have no sign
yes.
than the old
well,
sign.
Well, what I would like
because you've made the change in your mind, and you think
well,
it should say Chatter.
It was impressed upon us that a name change was very good idea.
Yeah.
Everybody felt that way, and now everybody's happy with the name, and so let's get it out there. Even if, was it Michael, was it your idea to have the kid with the sign?
Yeah, the spinning sign.
Just
sign
spinning
guy.
Around.
Mattresses yeah. here. Now it's, Nigel's old job.
This is moderate to heavy bands of rain now, and I wouldn't put a kid out there today.
Right.
I mean, even at the...
A grown man, but not a kid.
Of course they could work in the rain.
I would love to see a spinning sign guy at the corner of Wisconsin, Jennifer, right now, spinning chatter.
That would be good, wouldn't it? That'd be good.
Maybe one of those umbrella hats to keep him dry.
Exactly, that's all he needs.
You know what those were called,
the umbrella hats?
I do not.
They were called Brock umbrellas. Lou Brock, the great baseball player and base stealer, had an interest in those things. They are the rainbow-colored umbrellas that you literally wear on your head.
Now, was that to shade you from the sun, or was it to protect you from the rain? It was never clear to me.
I don't know.
Because it would keep your head dry, but yes, it wouldn't
only protect
a
small part of you.
I don't know. I have no answer for that. Lou Brock. They were called Brock umbrellas. Yeah.
Wow.
Yes.
I did not know that.
Well, there are athletes that have... Look at George Foreman.
Yeah.
With the George Foreman grill. Sure. Look how much money... George Foreman made hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yes. I think more from the grill than he ever did boxing.
Oh, right. Yeah. And by the way, have you ever used the grill?
It's a sure way to kill a hamburger.
It's nothing special.
No.
Yeah. It's nothing special at all.
It presses all the juice out
of it.
But you know what? Not every... If you live in the city, if you live in an apartment on the 11th floor in New York City, it's your grill. Right?
Yeah, that's right.
I mean,
but it's
although
not,
these days
it's not
you
a
can
grill.
Have these days you can actually have an indoor grill and exhaust.
It's not actually a grill.
No, it's just like a panini press.
It's a hot plate.
It's a panini.
Yeah. It's a hot plate with a lid.
That's all it is. Yeah. All right. So let's get to the big
it would
news.
Collect
in
all
sports.
The fat, and then he'd show you. Look at all this fat.
And you then were pour it down the drain.
The lean grilling machine.
It'll kill your plumbing.
Right.
And that's the end of it. All right. So so sometimes we talk about things, and people say it's a DC centric show. And then sometimes we get lucky, and it's the lead story in sports. And this was last night, the fight of sorts, the small dust-ups of sorts throughout this, by two of the most annoying players. And I know you're going to think I'm going to say Markieff Morris. Markieff Morris just talks a lot. And he's physically imposing, and he knows how to play basketball. Brandon Jennings is a gnat. He's the kind of player that you like on your
team.
Such
an antagonist.
And hate on every other team. And he's hateable. He's hateable. He got tossed late. Rozier and they for no reason at all, they were bouncing off each other late.
He was doing Hamlet out
on
the court.
Brandon Jennings, and this is what we've seen with him in the last month, that he deliberately gets in the way of somebody and then pretends like he's the aggrieved party. And he's an annoying player. And I don't think he's that good a player.
Worked last night.
It did. It worked last night. But the bigger news in terms of physicality was Kelly Oubre Jr., who I believe going into this game was something like plus minus minus 80 in the playoffs. Minus 80 in the playoffs.
That's not good.
And Kelly Olynyk hit him at two times during the game. By the way, there was no game.
Early in the game.
No game.
No.
I mean,
over
Washington.
Yeah, right. Over
Washington
at 7-2.
Washington went 22-0 at one point in the first quarter. And some of us predicted, I went on TV yesterday, they will win. They'll win the two at home. They'll win every game at home because they win at home. They are, for those of you who don't know this, in the Eastern Conference in the calendar year of 2017, they have the best home record in the conference. They're the best.
30-11.
The only team with a better record than they in the conference in 2017 is Golden State Warriors. So they're really good at home, and they were going to win. And they did the thing they should have been doing all along, although the games were close.
Well, they did the thing they have done all along. They blew them out. The only difference was they hung on and won this time.
Well, they also put two and three guys on Isaiah Thomas. Because there's nobody else on Boston that can beat you.
That's right.
There really isn't. If you get beat by the other people on Boston, you have to swallow hard and say, okay.
Right.
If you, they limited Isaiah Thomas, who had 54 the other night, to 8 shots. And Isaiah Thomas is not shy. You know, he's not Kobe Bryant, but he's not shy.
Right.
And he only had 8 shots. And you're not going to win that way. And they didn't win. So the larger story in the game is what happened between Kelly Oubre and Kelly Olynyk. I think it's the only Kelly on Kelly fights that we've ever had in the NBA.
Right.
Kelly Olynyk for Boston, a functional player, nothing more than that. He hits two hard screens on Kelly Oubre, which appear on replay to be hard, but legit.
Yeah.
Hard but legit, right?
The second one, maybe not.
Okay. And after the second one, when he knocked Kelly Oubre down, Kelly Oubre came charging like the wild bull of the pampas.
Laid on the floor for a second just to calm down.
And ran into Kelly Olynyk and
jacked
like a battering ram, like a ship or an animal, like with the horns. What are those? Rams. When they get in those fights, then they bang you. And he did not punch him. Wilbon made this point on television.
Smart.
In terms of automatic suspensions. He did not punch him. His arms were down, but he knocked him. He He flew across the barroom floor.
Just to clarify, you're not suggesting for a second that he will not be suspended.
I am not.
Okay.
But I'm suggesting
but
that
yes,
Wilbon,
he did not throw a punch.
Right. If he'd thrown just a punch, he might be suspended for more than
right.
one game.
Right. I think that's
but he
that's
knocked
probably
him
right.
down.
Yeah, this is just one game.
And he got tossed, and rightfully so.
Yeah.
Because you can't do that. And then there's a skirmish. Nobody else, you know why nobody throws punches?
Because
of Phoenix.
Know.
You don't, right. many yeah. years ago, you don't throw punches. That's just not the way it goes. But he's got to go, right? Now, people will say, Wilbon
no
said
question.
That energized the Wizards. I don't think they were
already yeah. up 100.
Yeah, I don't think it did at all. But, I don't think they feel bad about it at all.
But it's a bit of a tone setter. I mean, if Keith does that, you're not shocked. But seeing it from Oubre, I was like, man, they've had it.
So what do you think about what will happen, and how do you think that plays in the locker room?
Well, I think they have to suspend him for one game because there's obvious animosity between these two teams.
Oh. Yes.
If they do not suspend him.
All year.
Well, Isaiah yes. Thomas said post-game, we don't like them, they don't like yeah. us.
All year.
It's going to be a bloodbath if they don't come down hard on Kelly Oubre. I think.
This could be Boston, Baltimore.
It hearkened me back a little bit to the old days. I mean, it felt like early 90s playoff basketball, didn't it? It was like, had a little bit of a bad boys feel to it.
It is so interesting to me that the tone of the commentary after this by people on TV is exactly that. This is playoff basketball. This not just the way it is, the way it should be.
Yes.
The way it should be. That surprised me that everybody was endorsing this particular type of behavior, which, by the way, had it escalated any more, people would say, throw them out
right.
of the league.
Right.
So there's, right? Weren't you surprised by that?
Surprised by the scuffle?
No, by how well it was received by almost everybody.
Yes.
Well, old school.
Absolutely. Well, you know, it's like hockey. You've got your enforcers out there. I mean, you don't see John Wall or Bradley Beal mixing it up with Olenek.
Nor should they.
No, nor should they. But you've got your enforcers out there, and they're doing their job the way they do in hockey.
I never thought of Kelly Oubre in that way, though.
Many a commentator, many a columnist was writing in the run-up to yesterday's game that Washington needs to be more physical.
Tough.
They need to be tougher.
And yeah. now those same people, that sort of cheerleading faction, is forced to say, this is great. But if it happens again and there's an actual
punch.
Fist
yeah.
fight, they're going to go, oh,
well, don't,
you can't
don't,
have that.
Wouldn't you expect game four will revert to basketball as critical
yes.
a game as it now becomes?
Yes, because the eyes of the country will be on it.
Right.
And if there is a living, breathing commissioner,
to your point, they're not the Red Sox and the Orioles.
Well, on that note, I don't know if you guys saw this, but the Celtics have signed Chris Sale and Matt Barnes to 10-day contracts.
Yeah, so. I don't think
Machado
game
just hit
four
another
is going to be all love and peace. I mean, really? I think the fuse is still smoking there. I think things could erupt again.
I think, yeah, something could happen, and it's like simmering that it could explode again, without question. Because, this, as you said, Tony, this is not just this game or this series.
No, they don't.
This is all season.
They don't like each other.
Yeah.
This is like the Clippers and the Warriors. They don't like each other.
Yeah.
This stuff happens all the time with them. So,
except these teams actually play each other in the playoffs this
yes.
year.
Yes, well,
the Clippers couldn't.
When did this happen? Did this happen just this season or last season that this animosity
well,
started?
I read something where the Wizards all wore black to
yeah.
Boston
yeah,
over the year
because
they were going
yeah.
to the funeral.
Yeah,
this
and
is
was
by the way,
one game.
You talked about Markieff Morris. This is all at his instigation.
Yeah. That's fine.
He wasn't involved in this,
right?
But
right.
this is yeah. he's
it's got him written all over it.
The first note was happiest guy must be Markieff
yeah.
Morris. This is what he's
well, you
been
saw
calling
some
for.
Of yeah. this in game two. Out of Keith. I forget who he got into it with, but, you know,
it's usually him and Jay Crowder.
I mean, yeah. let me say, I all season have not looked at this Wizards roster and thought, man, that Oubre has a real chip on his shoulder.
Not
I mean, it seemed
all.
Like out of character
yeah, not
almost
at all.
For him. And
not at all. So, Boston, I don't know how the Wizards go to Boston and win. They haven't done it twice, so they've been close in both games,
yeah.
and they've been winnable games. But Boston is not going to win here. They're not.
No,
they're
Wizards
not
winning in
DC.
Boston is way more likely than the other two.
I agree. That's why.
But you're gonna have to get one.
I think they will. I mean, I think it's gonna be. I think the Wizards are gonna win. They're gonna win.
Then
the series.
You think they're gonna win in six, or you think they go there and win a seven?
I think they can go there and win a seventh.
Okay.
But it'd be easier to win in five. It'd be easier to win four straight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't want to go to seven.
Right.
But it would be easier to win in four straight. Michael, you went to the Nats yesterday.
I did.
Enjoy yourself. Scherzer with a very strong performance, particularly after he gave up that home run.
He picked up strength late in his pitching, and he got through a tough fourth inning. I mean, the big story, you look, Harper went out at the end of the sixth inning, and you just looked at the choices they had to make at the end of the game to close it out just because Sean Kelly was still sick. You have Coda Glover finishing up on the DL. And I think the biggest positive from all this is you look at Eni Romero, who was throwing straight gas to end out that ninth inning, and you just see so much upside, and he got that last ground out, too.
Have we seen the last of Joe Blanton?
Ugh.
One batter, one home run. Have we seen
the Socialite called? The Socialite called that home run before it happened.
The Socialite
like two Babe pitches Ruth. In. Yes.
What did he say?
Called shot.
No, he just said this. He's going to throw. He's going to give this one up.
Groove on.
Wow. So that was a good call. I mean, it's a. You're not going to go to Trinan, and I don't know how you can go to Blanton anymore. I mean, I Yikes. Just don't know how you do it.
So it just trickles down.
They went to Matt Albers, who had a very good inning, a 9-pitch inning, but then it's dicey in the ninth. And it was dicey in the ninth. But Scherzer was good.
I see the positive. You see dicey.
I always see dicey because I'm worried about that whole thing. All right, we're going to take a break. As I say, we are guest loaded. We're going to shut up. We're going to come back with Ann Hornaday and movies. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
All right, this is the MeUndies ad. All the men here have MeUndies, right? Does David have? Did you give David MeUndies? You just gave him the razor.
We don't talk about it.
David's nether region, not a topic for discussion.
Elevate your underwear game to the next level with MeUndies. You've perfected your wardrobe, but what about the stuff not everybody gets to see? If you've been settling for store-bought underwear 5-packs, I have something that will change your life for the better, and that is MeUndies. What is the first thing you put on? The last thing you take off? It's your underwear. Make the most important piece of clothing the best it can be with MeUndies. Michael, you have them?
Yeah,
you
I don't like know. Them? I don't know how I became the underpants spokesperson of the show.
Good physique.
Yeah.
I do have the MeUndies.
And you like
I wore them to the Nats game yesterday.
Fantastic.
I sent a 3-pack to David Klecka, who was kind enough to host Kim and I at the Final Four, and heard from him this week. I know it's, well, whatever. I'm very secure in my masculinity. I don't mind buying underwear for another man.
Yeah.
And he was absolutely raving about them. That's loves good. His MeUndies.
MeUndies
makes a great Christmas gift.
They're designed in Los Angeles and made from, well, Father's Day gift, too, you might think about. And
Mother's
made from,
Day gift.
Yeah,
so
a little more awkward. Sustainably sourced Micro Modal, a fabric 3 times softer than cotton. MeUndies softer than soft luxe undies come in an ever-changing selection of classic colors, bold shades, adventurous patterns, so you can tailor your undies to your own personal style. You can save time and money each month. You can get a monthly subscription. If you're not ready for a subscription, it's okay. You can still save. That's because MeUndies is offering you 20% off your first pair. Just use the special URL, MeUndies.com/TonyK. Get 20% off your first pair. So go ahead and revamp your underwear drawer. You deserve it. Once again, that's MeUndies.com/TonyK. MeUndies.com/TonyK.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Patrick Boberg of Des Moines, Iowa, who goes under the name of Responsibly Wild. And this song is called River Road, which we take in Washington.
I just came down very often, river on River Road.
Yeah, to go to Congressional Country Club.
Aptly named River Road.
Take River Road. And Patrick writes, love the show. Haven't missed an episode since day one. I figure it's about time I fired a jingle your way. While my live rock and roll days are well behind me, I still write and record an eclectic assortment of video production music under the moniker Responsibly Wild, giving much of it away copyright-free on YouTube. If any of your listeners are looking for royalty-free bed music, tell them to punch youtube.com/responsiblywild into the Google machine and download away carefree.
How about
that? It's very sweet. Ann Hornaday joins us now. The big movie of the week, and maybe the big movie of the summer, for all I know, is Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. This is two things I don't like. One, it's those kinds of movies, sort of sci-fi, almost comedic movies that are cartoonish, and Volume 2 I don't like. So it doesn't matter if I like it. I'm not the audience for this. There are tens of millions of people, if not hundreds of millions of people around the world who are the audience for this. How is it?
Well, I'm kind of, you know, this was such a huge hit a few years ago, the first Guardians of the Galaxy. It was, I guess it was, I guess you could qualify it almost as a sleeper hit, because I just don't think people saw it coming, that it would be so huge. And I was one of those strange, stunted, morally defective people who was just uncharmed. I just didn't find it nearly as charming and, you know, and great and endearing as so many people. So I already went in a little more skeptical than most. I do think it'll please the fans. I still remain steadfastly uncharmed. It's way too long. I mean, this puppy came in at like 2 hours, 20 minutes, and I'm so sorry, but there is absolutely no reason for a movie of this ilk and this kind of subject matter and to be that long. I just thought it was repetitive. And I have a little screed in today's Washington Post about one of my pet peeves about these movies, which is that they are an example of this kind of, you know, soundtrack-driven movie that really uses music just to hook the audience and to kind of get, you know, to kind of get a winky little buy-in from people. They did it with Hooked on a Feeling was kind of the theme song of the first movie.
That would drive
me out. It's kind of kitschy. It's kind of kitschy and fun, and it's a throwback to your old days. And this one, they use Brandy and a Fleetwood Mac song.
Brandy is awful.
Remember that one?
Brandy's a terrible song.
Yeah, but that's
I don't remember that, Anne. How does it go? Can you sing a couple bars?
Hooked on a Feeling is a bad enough song. Brandy's a terrible song. So, where's Anne?
Oh, have we lost Anne?
No, did we lose Anne?
Where did she go?
What are you doing
she
here?
She was offended at the suggestion that she sing for us.
Call Anne back.
Oh, there she is.
Are you there? Anne, are you there? We've lost Anne.
I could sing.
Oh, no.
Brandy. Oh, there she is.
Oh, well, then talk.
Okay. Hello?
Yeah. Do you hear us, Anne?
Of course I do.
Okay, so we were commenting on how terrible both those songs are, and then you sort of dropped off. So we thought the Guardians of the Galaxy had killed you.
I know. It's the forces that were not with me. But no, they do. They go back to these old So Bad They're Good songs, and they kind of make them the fun little, you know, sub-anthem of the movie. And I don't find it cute, and I find it kind of tiresome and a little bit lazy. So I'm probably the wrong person to ask about this, but I do think the fans will probably like it. It has the exact same kind of humor. It has the same characters coming back. You know, there's Kurt Russell plays a very key role, and it's always good to see him because he's fabulous.
Yeah, I like Kurt Russell.
Yeah, me too. This just isn't, I don't know, it's funny to me, like I said, I'm surprised at the degree of adoration for this film, this franchise, this mini franchise.
So because I don't see these movies, I don't any distinctions between Marvel comics and DC comics, and you know, and I don't know which is which. Of all of these things, in your mind, which is the most satisfying and successful from a movie reviewer standpoint?
Well, I do think I am now learning, like you, I was not a comics, you know, person when I went into this business, and of course you have to be now. And I do now see a big distinction between Marvel, which this is a part of.
Right.
This is probably one of my least favorite offshoots of the Marvel world, but I actually have enjoyed the Marvel movies a lot. I mean, strangely enough, I think one of my favorite self-contained strains is the Captain America movies. I think they've been really well written and well directed, and I love Chris Evans in that role. And I liked the little offshoots like Ant-Man. Ant-Man to me is that kind of cheeky, light, funny movie that Guardians is too, but I prefer the Ant-Man.
Okay.
They've actually been consistently excellent, really, the Marvel movies.
So Anne is not endorsing Guardians of the Galaxy 2, which
I
wasn't going to see anyway.
Not for you and me, but for the fans, I will.
All right. For the fans. I mean, fans are going to go
we
see.
Care. Yeah. We
looks
care.
Looks good on you, though.
Yeah, so let me go to two movies here that Richard Gere is apparently in, and I haven't heard of Richard Gere in quite some time.
I know.
And so I wonder what he's been doing. But one is called Norman, in which he plays a New York City fixer, and one is called Dinner. So why don't we take Norman first? Where's Richard Gere been since Chicago?
Well,
where's he been?
You know, he's been doing, I mean, like so many, it's funny this year, we have so many of our beloved, like Shirley MacLaine and, you know, we're going to be talking about Deborah Winger next week, and they're going indie. You know, they're being cast in smaller movies. These people that when we were, you and I were coming up, they were the blockbuster star. They were the Jennifer Lawrences of their day, and the Chris Pratts of their day. And of course now they're doing these small indie movies, and sometimes they can be really wonderful, as is the case of this one, this movie called Norman. It's by this Israeli filmmaker named Joseph Cedar, and it's about this guy, this, you know, 80-something guy in New York, maybe he's in the 70s. He can't be 80.
Richard Gere can't be 80.
Trying to make deals. He's a deal maker. And he just runs around the city all day trying to put people together and get a little piece of the action. And that's Richard Gere, and he plays it just beautifully, and his character becomes involved with a trade minister from Israel who he tries to rope into this big, you know, once-in-a-lifetime main chance kind of a deal. And they develop a relationship, and then it just goes in directions you don't expect. But it is really funny. It's kind of in that Woody Allen vein of urban, verbal humor, but it's a really visual, gracefully filmed movie. I mean, it's just, I thought it was absolutely beautifully directed. And wonderful, just a wonderful performance from Gere. I mean, he's turned into a real character actor, kind of like Kevin Costner, who I never was a huge fan of when he was a big star.
Right.
I thought he was a little stiff and just a little self-aware. And now these guys are turning into these fabulous character actors. And it's just a very touching, sweet, funny, observant movie. Michael Sheen is in it, Josh Charles, Dan Stevens, Steve Buscemi plays a rabbi. Beautiful performance.
I can't see that.
Just a great supporting. I don't know. I think this is something you would enjoy.
Honestly, Steve Buscemi as a rabbi is difficult for me.
He nails it.
If you see him in The Big Lebowski,
or
you just
Fargo.
Cannot imagine that he's, or Fargo,
no,
that he's
you
a rabbi. But okay.
No, all these people are aging very well, and I think this is something you would enjoy.
Norman.
This is something I would send you to.
What about Dinner? Is Dinner
any
good?
That I wouldn't send you to.
Okay.
If you see one Richard Gere movie this weekend, make it Norman.
Okay.
Put it that way.
Okay.
The dinner is based, I remember a few years ago reading reviews of this novel from a Dutch writer named Herman, and I guess, I don't know how he pronounces his last name, Koch.
What are you
asking
me for?
About two couples that go out to an extraordinarily fancy dinner and have a very highly charged encounter over the course of this long, you know, haute cuisine dinner. And I do remember reading the reviews, and this is an adaptation of it with Richard Gere, Laura Linney.
Who I like a lot.
Who is amazing, Steve Coogan, and the great Rebecca Hall. So, I mean, right there, you have a tremendous good ensemble, and they are all excellent, and they actually each, there's kind of, they're each has a moment in this movie that's outstanding. I just don't think, you know, the director is really interesting. It's this guy, Oren Moverman, who wrote the movies I'm Not There and Love and Mercy, the Bob Dylan and Brian Wilson.
The Love and Mercy I liked a lot. That's
exactly.
The Brian Wilson
He's a really, Oren, and he wrote, he directed The Messenger. He's a really good filmmaker. And I think he made some choices in this movie that might have undermined what he was trying to do. I mean, he has to kind of, he opened it up. In other words, he leaves the room to do flashbacks and some parallel storytelling that I think dilutes the drama of this kind of tightly contained chamber piece with these people inside kind of going at it. And part of me wonders and wishes that he had been able to find a way to keep us in that room and just ratchet up that drama and ratchet up the revelations. I don't know if he could have. I mean, that's just a technical exercise. But yeah, I can't say that it succeeds wildly. But like I said, great cast, and each of them, I mean, you can't fault the actors because they're all really, really good.
Was this, this comes from a novel, not from an actual stage play?
Correct.
Because very often the stage plays are so contained that when they're opened up, they don't work. They
exactly,
don't work.
And as a matter of fact, funny you should mention it, it is a novel, not a play, but the movie that it most reminded me of was something that came out a few years ago called Carnage, which was an adaptation of a play that Roman Polanski did with Jodie Foster and mm-hmm. Kate Winslet mm-hmm. and John C. Reilly, and that is all in one apartment, and it's a very similar dynamic with two couples kind of going at it, and the subject matter is their children, which is also true of this one. So it's thematically very similar, but I think you know, that one did take place all in the course of one afternoon.
It's interesting to me. I mean, because when you talked about this, what I immediately thought of, and you have to be very old to think of this, is Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
Oh, sure.
Which
yeah.
is which is the tension standard, yeah. in that is extraordinary. If you open it up, it isn't nearly as good because everything
right.
everything that's great about it is in one room. That's what
right.
it is.
And it just, yep, it depends on that boiling point. And I just yep. don't think, like, there's, yeah, it doesn't reach it. But,
okay.
you know, good try.
All right. Okay. Thank you, Ann.
It's always a pleasure.
And Ann, before we let you go, you know, we have this podcast studio. And we're
yes.
sitting in it right now at Chatter.
So I hear.
Waiting for the rain to wash us out. And I know Arch is high on doing, you know, a podcast with you. And I just, I want to make sure that you want to do this. Because I just think this would be a very good idea. I think you have, you and Arch together would have so many more listeners than you can imagine just sitting where you are now. You really would.
Well, I mean, if you say two words to me, Arch Campbell,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
like, what time is it? What time can
okay.
I be there?
Good. So we'll do that.
So we're trying to make this happen. We're
Thank
trying
you.
To make it happen on this end, and I would love, love, love it.
Thank you, Ann.
Always a pleasure.
Ann Hornaday, boys and girls. We will take a break. We will come back with news, but most of the newscast, if not all of the newscast, will be the great Andy Beyer talking about tomorrow's Kentucky Derby, which I don't know about you, snuck up a little bit on me. I just was...
Yeah,
I was unaware of it, and I don't
doing
know.
It in May this year.
Yeah,
that
amazing
day.
First Saturday in May, which is so surprising to me because usually it's the first Saturday in May. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is sent to us by Dennis J. Sullivan. The name of the band is Jay Paris, and they're from Dover, Delaware, a city I'm familiar with. The song is Until I Die. It's wonderful music. Michael, if people want to send original music to us, how do they do it?
They can email jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
And I am wearing my Johnny O hat today.
Wow.
And
I like that hat.
I'm wearing
actually.
A Johnny O sweater.
I've not seen the Johnny O hat.
Yeah, it's a nice
like
Johnny O hat because you need it in the rain. And if people want to avail themselves... of fine clothing. How do they do
Before
that?
Before I plug Johnny O, what is still attached to your hat?
A hat thing.
That's how the kids
a
wear
tag.
A tag.
A
yeah.
tag.
A tag.
That you tucked under the hat.
Yeah, I like the tag.
Yes, the Johnny
Michael
O.
Michael believes I'm going to give it away to someone after I've worn it to become a game-worn
hat. Game-worn
hat.
I think there's a chance.
Not in the Eli Manning way, though.
Right.
Yes, the Tony K Actually. Promo code for Johnny O is still live, and you can find that through our website or our Twitter handle at This Show Stinks.
We're very high on Johnny O clothing. Andy Beyer joins us now because it is the day before the Kentucky Derby, and earlier this morning I was watching the Today Show, and it is pouring right now, like it's pouring here in Washington. It's pouring in Louisville, and they say that it is going to rain again tomorrow. Andy, the one thing that changes the way people look at horse racing is weather, like really bad weather conditions. How big a factor is this going to be for the Kentucky Derby?
You know, it's Tony, it's hard. First of all, I want to thank you for not playing I've Got a Horse Right Here.
We didn't do it.
As the intro to this segment.
Didn't do it.
That's the outro.
Very creative of
yeah.
you. Yes, I mean there are so many uncertainties in the Derby under the best of circumstances that a muddy track really compounds them, because you know these are mostly lightly raced horses, and I was just looking. I mean, very few of them have ever been in the mud, and we know that there are some horses who will hate the mud, and others might move up in it. So it adds a real element of uncertainty to the race. It'll give me an excuse for picking a loser, as I usually do. So
it's interesting, though, because somebody like yourself, I mean, that's the first, when you find out most conditions are fine, but if it gets muddy and sloppy, you really have to change up, don't you? I mean, it changes like on a post position, it changes on a rider, it changes on a horse. You don't know.
But you don't know how to change, because
okay.
it's not as if you can look and say, boy, this horse really loves the mud, or another one really hates it.
Right.
It's just a big gray area. I mean, unless we were to see on Derby Day that speed horses, were winning everything, or that horses were like, regularly coming from way behind, you know, and rallying 10 wide, unless there was some trend like that. I mean, there's nothing much you can do except kind of go with your opinion you came in with.
I'm wondering, and sometimes you have a sense of this, it's almost like predicting the NBA draft when everybody comes out of college after just 1 year. How is this crop of three-year-olds? Was there buzz for them? Is it a good one?
No,
is it a bad one?
No, it's bad.
Okay.
Nobody has really stamped himself as a top horse, and they've had enough chances to show if they're really good. I mean, the speed figures that all of these horses have earned are all way below, you know, the norm for winning a Kentucky Derby. And so I don't expect some great star to emerge from this race. Probably the best horse of this group and the one who might be the favorite is Classic Empire. And I say it was the best horse of the group based on his victory in the Breeders' Cup as a two-year-old. He was the champion two-year-old last season. But he's had, like, nothing but problems this year. I mean, he came out onto the track for his first start. He looked lousy. He's been going to the track in the morning. Some days he's refused to train. You know, finally he won a prep race in Arkansas, but it was slow against bad horses. So I think he's disqualified himself as a real legitimate contender, and that leaves a bunch of pretty undistinguished horses.
One of them has one eye. What does that mean? Is that good?
They don't all have one eye?
Well, no, they all have two eyes. He's got one functional eye.
So they all have at least one.
Well, the horse in question, Patch, I would say it's... with one eye or two, his fate is going to be the same on Saturday. He's not that good. I think that the fact that this is the story in the Washington Post yesterday shows that everybody is a little desperate for something colorful to write about at this Derby.
So I'm talking about this with Wilbon, that he's got one eye, and what I said to Wilbon was, but very often in horse racing, they put blinders on horses all the time because all they want them to do is look straight ahead and not move from side to side. Would it be a significant detriment to have one eye? Has there ever been a champion one-eyed horse? I have no idea.
There have been horses with vision impairments, and as you say, I mean they do use blinkers on horses routinely. So I think that's the least of the issues that are relevant to this Derby.
Okay.
Tony, isn't it the famous song, I've been through a desert with a horse with one eye?
No, with no name.
Oh, is that it? No name.
There is, of course, more horses that run in the Kentucky Derby than run in any of the other Triple Crown races that may run in any other race ever. They allow, I think, up to 20. Is there any horse, as you were doing the handicapping, where you said this post position will kill this horse, this horse is out?
You know, it's really hard to predict how the race is going to unfold because, on the one hand, you would like to not have your horses, go too wide around the turns. But on the other hand, the inside, the horses breaking from the inside post sometimes just get so blocked and caught up in traffic that they're compromised. It's really hard to say with any confidence that, a horse is, going to be helped or hurt by a particular post position. I mean, in a 20-horse race, I mean, racing luck is just is going to be a huge issue, wherever your starting position is.
All right, give us the winner. You do this every year. Sometimes you win.
Well, I give you a horse every year.
Right,
not necessarily
right.
The winner. I have a tepid preference for number 17, Irish War Cry. He won two important prep races this spring. Sandwiched between them was an absolutely horrible 21-length loss at Gulfstream Park. So a lot of people are kind of wary of him because he threw in, you know, he was capable of throwing in such a stinker. But I think that was an aberration. I liked his win in the Wood Memorial at Aqueduct. I like his trainer, Graham Motion, who won the Derby a few years ago with Animal Kingdom. So, you know, he's got enough speed to, you know, to get a tactical position. And I think he's got the stamina. That's the best I can do. A couple long shots, Guinevere and Hintz, are going to be my horses for assorted exactas. But in truth, even on a fast track, I wouldn't have had much confidence. And, you know, in a sea of slop, I'm wavering even more.
Thank you, Andy. Thank you. We'll talk to you before the Preakness. It's always a great treat for me to have you on. Thanks, Andy.
Great. Thanks, Tony. Bye-bye.
Andy Beyer, boys and girls. And the Irish War Cry is the horse that Joe Farrell of Olney, Maryland, picked the other day.
6-1.
Yeah, my friend Eddie is picking Practical Joke. So yesterday on the air, I was at the end of the show, I'm going to say my friend Eddie, we're continuing our Kentucky Derby preview, which Wilbon hates because he hates, as he refers to them, just the horses.
Right.
And Eddie picks, and I looked down because I had forgotten it, and while I looked down, I wasted a full second. The show ended. So nobody heard that Eddie picked Practical Joe.
That was a great tease.
And nobody heard.
And how ironic that the horse's name is Practical Joe.
Yeah, so I felt like an idiot. I immediately texted him because he said, I'm going to tell my grandchildren you're going to make my pick on the air.
No.
I said, I'm really sorry. Tell your grandchildren not to watch. Don't watch cartoons or something like that because it wasn't going to work. Nigel, you have a couple of news stories that we really need to get to.
Yes, I do indeed, Mrs. Tony. Before we get to the newscast, this newscast is brought to us by Noah. If you want to get out of the rain, you should have built an ark just like me. Yeah. Mr. Tony, you are often called a big baller.
Yeah.
So I imagine that you will want to get on board with the big baller brand of shoes that was just launched yesterday as LeVar Ball unveiled the Zoe 2 shoe
These
line.
These are the Lonzo Ball shoes.
Yes, designed for his son Lonzo. They debut at a very cheap $495 on the company's website. Now, if that's too rich for your blood, you might want to settle for the sandals.
These are flip-flops.
Flip-flops, essentially, that run for $220.
$220 for flip-flops.
And if you have a...
If it's autographed...
If you have a big foot, I think size 14 and 15 run $695.
The autographed ones are $9.95. Yes. Not right. $9.95, $995. And I would... You know, look, I'm not going to knock LeVar Ball because I think that self-promotion can work in a lot of levels. And I admire wonderful self-promotion. But if his kid isn't great, nobody's buying these shoes.
Well,
nobody's buying these shoes.
If you're the team that drafts that
dangerous.
Kid, dangerous.
I think the question get that ready. You said, if his kid isn't great, no one's buying these shoes. If his kid is great, how many people are buying these shoes? $500?
Seems like a lot, doesn't it?
How else can he build a billion-dollar company?
I mean, it's twice... It's twice what the ceiling is for shoes.
What are the best Air Jordan shoes?
How much are they?
$400.
Oh, they are?
$400. The most expensive. Or they were just under $400.
And these are $500?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money, isn't it?
Yeah. And what they talked about, some industry experts, and I guess there are shoe experts, they say, now, you shouldn't be fooled by initial sales for this sneaker because collectors might grab it. And although there might be initial great sales, the market will just sort of die out after that.
What's the most you pay for?
I was just thinking, I spent that much on a pair of Chanel boots.
Right, so you would do it.
Well, for Chanel boots, I wouldn't, you know, like to nice places. I don't think I would do it for like an everyday shoe.
Well, why not? Right. You'd be able to amortize it even better.
I mean, it'd be the reverse.
Yeah.
Well,
how about a flip flop?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gary, what's the most you've ever spent on anything?
Well, on a flip flop, I have spent north of $500, but on a shoe.
But that included the airfare to where you were going to use it.
Actually, these dress shoes that I'm currently wearing are about 20 years old. I paid about $300 for them. But that was in a casino in Vegas. They're probably worth about $1.25 at the time.
Good shoes.
But,
and I buy Allen Edmonds shoes. I buy them on sale, but I go to Allen Edmonds. They list for about $350 to $400 if you get a really good sale. They might go for $200 or $2.25, and they will last... You know, 20 years, and they're really, really good.
But I will add this parenthetically, which is relevant because I think, believe it or not, I think youth are largely targeted in this instance. Mm-hmm. My kids,
parents of youth,
who get a hard time at school because they've got air quotes bad shoes.
Right.
I don't spend a lot of money on their shoes. I'm like, you know, find something under $50 that you like.
Michael, what's the most you've ever
Tough
spent?
Like
You're
that.
A kid. What's the most you've ever spent?
On shoes?
Oh, well, on anything.
Ooh.
I mean, and by you, I mean not me. I mean, not like your wedding suit, which you've worn once.
I wore that suit more than
and
once.
That is a great suit. And that,
good looking suit.
That was a lot of money. Yeah. You've worn it once.
I don't spend more than $100 on shoes.
Not more than $100?
Not on shoes.
No, he didn't call me when he wore it. It was his wedding. I was at his wedding. He hasn't worn it. You've worn it since, that wedding suit?
I wore it to the White
House. Called
you
a few things that night. I heard him.
The most I've ever spent is $1,200. Oh. But I have very expensive taste.
But there were two, that was two girls. $1,200
on shoes?
No, I think, like, I wear cowboy boots.
Right.
Like, that's all I really wear.
$1,200?
No, the most I think I'm paid for is like $300.
Aren't the most famous cowboy boots Tony Lama boots?
Yes, and they're you can spend a lot of money.
Easily. You could easily spend $1,000 on
boots. Yeah, it's very easy to do that.
I spent.
Human skin and stuff.
The wildest thing I ever did was I bought those Zegna jeans for $400.
Yeah. That reunion, right?
Yeah, and I've worn them here and there. I've worn them.
Have they held up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about the boat shoes? How much do those run?
Well, on sale at Bass.
Three for a hundred.
Those Zegna jeans.
I mean, a pair and a half.
You got them. You got them tailored at the store.
At Saks.
And they were
right across the street. Literally
three quarters of an inch too high. And I think that's why you never wear them.
No, they weren't.
You
think they're too high?
I have not told you this before.
No, you have not.
The jeans are far too high.
You had the high water
mark. Jerry Seinfeld
look. The waist is too high?
No, the bottom cuff.
I don't like when everything trails in the dust. I don't like when it folds over.
Yeah, and then you get like the fraying on the back.
Yeah, I don't like that. I spent too much money on these for that to happen, but I don't wear them enough. I should wear them all the time, and I don't.
They get your money's worth. Maybe pull them down on your waist a little bit so they're not high water.
But this is LeVar Ball. He's got a plan.
He's
got a plan.
I don't know. I mean, you see him moving a lot of $500 shoes?
No. But if Lonzo Ball's great, if he's great and he's a great talker, you know,
So here's the plan for this shoe. If Lonzo Ball is great, and you say, guess what? Now it's $350 and everyone thinks it's a bargain, then you can move some. But even if he's great, $500?
It's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money.
Yeah. It's a lot of money. We will take a break.
It's like $350 a foot.
We're going to bring John Heilemann on with us from Game Change and from the Showtime series Circus. And we'll have Old Guy Radio before that. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Books ad. Sending flowers has always been the best way to show someone you care. But if you're the one doing the sending, it isn't always easy or satisfying. You're lured in with a $19.99 advertised price, and when you check out, it's $94. What happened? There are hidden fees that leave you with a big bill and even bigger disappointment when your flowers show up looking different than the pictures and they only last a few days. Books.com is a better way to buy flowers. The Books company offers fully transparent pricing, an easy, affordable shopping experience, and an incredible curated selection of flowers starting at $40, including free delivery. Each Book is sustainably farmed and comes straight from grower to customer, meaning your flowers will last longer and cost less to buy. This year, show every mom in your life that you care with flowers from the Books company. Special offer for all the littles listening to this show. You order now, you get 20% off. The flowers will sell out, so don't wait. Just visit Books.com, enter the code TONY for 20% off of your Mother's Day purchase. That is Books.com, B-O-U-Q-S. The U is before the Q, B-O-U-Q-S. Books.com, code TONY at checkout.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Old Guy Radio for the day. This is the great Van Morrison from Ireland, singing about the great Jackie Wilson from the United States of America. This is Jackie Wilson's set. In terms of critical commentary, why did we do this? Because we like it.
And we like Jackie Wilson.
We like Jackie Wilson. We like Van Morrison. You, Nigel, you had some sense of this.
Yeah, just Van Morrison was a big fan of Jackie Wilson, and Jackie Wilson sort of influenced the style of which he sang. And like you, he loves that line, repetit, you know, and so he just wanted to pay tribute to Jackie Wilson, and that's how this song came.
We could play Van Morrison every day.
Yes.
I mean, we could. We're not going to. We play other things, including The Death of the Red Baron, or whatever that stupid song is.
Snoopy song.
That's Red Baron. Over for the year.
Snoopy versus...
Maybe.
Well, one can only hope. John Heilemann joins us now. He became a godlike figure in political reporting when he and Mark Halperin did Game Change some years back. That became a great movie, and both of them are on MSNBC and NBC a million times, and did the rip-off PTI show, which I admired. So there's a million things to talk about. First of all, the show that you guys are doing now, the last episode, I believe, is tonight on Showtime, The Circus, right?
No. The show's okay. the last That show airs on Sundays. So it's the last episode, our finale for season two is on this Sunday night. And I just want to say one thing quickly before we do that. Jackie Wilson said, and I don't know how you knew this, Mr. Tony, but Jackie Wilson said is the song that was played at my wedding the moment after I put the ring on my wife's finger. And so I love that song, and it means a lot to me, and I'm a huge Van Morrison fan. The song will forever live in my memory for that moment. We played it because we love it so much. But also, when I hear you say that we're godlike figures, the main person who would agree or disagree with that would be my wife.
Well, that's
true on the call right now. She'd be like, what are you talking about, Tony?
People have to be grounded in their own homes, but nowhere else. I need to ask one question about the circus, which I have watched and like, and I think everybody asks this question. Why does your boy wear a scarf all the time? What is up with that? Why is he always wearing scarves?
He wears the scarves. He also wears the hat.
Yeah.
He wears that Stetson everywhere. I cannot be accountable for the fashion, or rather unfashionable choices of my dear friend Mark McKinnon. I can't explain it. I don't have a good answer for you. It makes everybody around him roll their eyes in a very theatrical but loving way.
Okay, so that's good. So I had to ask that, and I'm going to get to political things. I had a million things to ask you until yesterday, last night, when I realized that the first question has to be, this seems like a very big win for Donald Trump. To get that bill through the House when it was dead on arrival the last time, to such a degree that they pulled it. In short order, I'm sure it's possible he won't get through the Senate. But to get that through the House when people said he can't do a thing, from my eyes, that looks like a big win. But I will yield to you if you tell me it isn't.
Well, I think there are two ways to think about it. And one is the way you're thinking about it, which is unquestionably for an administration that had 100 days go by and had not a single significant legislative accomplishment to get something through the House of Representatives is definitely a win. There's no way to gainsay the notion that Trump got something here that makes him look like he's a competent president in the sense that he wanted this bill, he couldn't get it through, now he's gotten it through. No doubt about it. And I think anybody who says, you know, that he shouldn't feel good, he, the president, shouldn't feel good about the fact that this thing, that Paul Ryan and House Republicans were able to revive it and get it through the House, anybody who thinks that is not giving him, is just stuck on the notion that they'll never give Trump credit for anything. Okay, having said that, there are two other things. You know, there is a notion, and I know you're a scholar of Greek philosophy and Greek history. You know,
and Greek yogurt, yes.
Yeah, and Greek yogurt, yeah. You know, there's a concept, a famous concept notion of the Pyrrhic victory.
Right.
You know, a Pyrrhic victory is a thing that looks like a victory, but in the end turns out to be a loss. And I think that you know, this morning, the Cook Political Report, which is one of the real genuinely godlike political analysis outfits here in Washington that looks at House races and Senate races. They're going to put out a report this morning that takes 20 House races, and in their forecast is going to take them and move them from Republicans, their seats that Republicans hold that they now think the Republicans, as of today, are now likely to lose because of this vote last night. Right? The politics of this bill are horrible for the Republican Party, and Nancy Pelosi yesterday said, we're going to tattoo this bill to your forehead, you House Republicans who voted for it. We're going to make you glow in the dark because it's a bill that when the CBS score comes out, it's going to say 20 million some Americans are going to lose their health care coverage because of this, if it became law, which it probably won't. And it's going to balloon the deficit, and it's going to give a giant tax cut to rich people, and it's going to hurt people who are on the working class and middle class and poor end of the scale. So the politics of this were wretched when they tried to pass it before, and they're wretched now. To the extent the public understands this version of the bill, it has about a 20% popularity rating out there. So a lot of Republicans have taken a very dangerous vote here, especially moderate Republicans who are in districts that Hillary Clinton won. They are going to have a problem. The images from yesterday of these guys celebrating at the White House are going to be part of campaign ads. They have this could be one of the things that leads to Republicans losing control of the House next year. And you'll remember that this is exactly what happened back in 2009, 2010 in reverse. Democrats took a really hard vote on Obamacare. The president celebrated winning. Again, we're way short of this becoming law.
Right.
President Obama, Democrats celebrated winning, and then the Democrats lost control of the House of Representatives because the politics of that bill were horrible for Democrats. So, look, you know, the other thing, and I'll just say the last thing, and then I'll let you talk, is, you know, what we saw yesterday with the House Republicans going to the White House to celebrate the passage of a bill through the House, I've never seen that before. You know, you don't take a victory lap when you've just moved, you know, the football game.
Leading
right?
at
you
halftime.
Get the ball, you get a first down on the 30-yard line, you're on 30.
Yeah.
You don't then call timeout and celebrate because you're not in the end zone yet, right? It reminds me of, you know, George W. Bush standing up on that aircraft carrier in 2003 with the sign that said mission accomplished when the Iraq War was far from over. And then for the next 10 years, the war turned into a disaster and everybody laughed at the fact that he put up that mission accomplished sign. That's a little bit like what Donald Trump did yesterday. So that's my view.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, that's the owner of the Atlanta Falcons on the sideline dancing,
yeah.
forgetting that Tom Brady is Tom Brady. Arthur yes, Blank, the dancing fool at that point. So that's why I yield to you on this whole thing. And I'm interested in everything you're saying. I would point out, though, one of the other visuals I saw were Democrats in Congress waving and singing "Na Na Hey Hey Goodbye" to Republicans. You know, I mean, it began to look like the Red Sox and the Orioles at some point.
Yeah, not the classiest thing I've seen Democrats do.
Right.
And you know, look, I mean, I think everybody should, it'd be better politics for everybody to keep their powder dry a little bit on both sides.
Okay.
You know, again, because there's a sports, because there's obviously a sport, when I'm on with Mr. Tony, we should talk about sports. You know, you remember there's that great story about Vince Lombardi saying to one of his players who had done an end zone dance after he scored a touchdown, Lombardi saying, hey, you know, the next time you're in the end zone, you should look like you've been there before.
Yeah.
You know, that's always, I think, a better look. You know, just, you know, try to be, to try to keep your, we're in very early, I don't want to switch sports metaphors here, but we're in very early innings of this game, right?
I get that. You know, I get that. So I've got, I had a bunch of things. I thought that, that the win yesterday, which may not be as big a win as I thought, was something we had to talk about first. But the other thing, one of the things I want to talk about was an extraordinary interview in which he said, this job's harder than I thought. What did he think it would be?
Honestly, I do not know. And, you know, one of the things, this goes to, I mean, we've seen this now a few times with Trump, right? First, he said the thing about how, who knew healthcare reform was so complicated? You know, and the answer to that was
anybody
who's been involved in it for any, or even paid attention for the last 20, 30 years, right? Then he said the thing about he was kind of surprised to learn how big the government was. You know, he's like, my God, this government's really big. And then this thing about the job. And I think the reality is that he never really I think he thought that in some ways being president was like being the head of a company where, you know, a CEO is the head of a big company. If you're a CEO, you don't really run the company, right? You're kind of like you're the marketer in chief for it. You're the brander. You're the guy who kind of projects the image of the company. But the chief operating officer runs the company. The CFO runs the company. The C-suite, you know, your chief marketing officer, all these other guys run the company. I think he got into the White House, and the first moment that it really struck him was literally the day after the election when he had this private conversation with Barack Obama. And I think, you know, you remember after that, he came out and they shook hands and he looked like he'd been, like, hit in the head with a 2x4.
Yeah.
And I think he had been, because Obama basically was telling him, you know, okay, here's some of the things you're going to, like, the first day in office, here's some of the stuff, here's what your day is going to look like, Mr. President-elect. And I think Trump was like, oh, my God, really? That's what this job is? And I think that sense of the scope of the job, the responsibilities of the job, the gravity of the job, the difficulties of the job, like how complicated all the moving pieces of democracy are, like what the role of the Congress is, I don't think he understood any of that stuff, really. And I think it's been an incredibly rude awakening for him, just how little actual power, in a funny way. I mean, apart from launching a war, which a president can do pretty much on his own, apart from that, how little power the president has without being able to, without doing a whole bunch of other stuff to bring a lot of really reluctant, often recalcitrant people around. I don't think he got that before.
I agree.
Pretty much now.
I agree, because I think what he was used to doing is having an immediate effect on all the people that he had to deal with. And just there's Congress here, and it's different.
Right.
You just can't say, oh, I said it and it's good. It doesn't work that way. And I thought it was very revealing. Actually, but maybe I'm reading too much into it. Yesterday,
yes,
everybody sees this when he says, "I'm president." Do you believe it?
Hey.
I'm president.
Yeah,
president.
Yeah. So. I think that's true. I think it's true. But here's the other thing I'll say, and just about that interview. People, elites, I think, mocked him. They like to mock him, and I sometimes mock him. But when he said that thing about how he was surprised at how hard the job was, right? I think that elites mocked that, And it raises the question that you raised, which is like, what did he think he was getting into? But I don't think that that goes over badly among average Americans. I think like most Americans, you know, who are not connected to politics and don't pay attention to this every day, they hear him say that and they think, that's probably what I'd say.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah.
I can see that.
Wow. You know, he's like, well, you know, if I got that job, I'd be like, wow, this thing's really hard. You know, it's a very human thing that I think it's really relatable to a lot of people. And I don't think, although it costs him, it gets him mocked in the Beltway, but I'm not sure that it damages that. I'm not sure that damages him politically with average Americans.
So let me go to this notion that if you look at the presidency, it begins with who is he going to appoint and who is going to be in his inner circle, and a couple of people leave and a couple of people come in, and then it goes to, does he have any executive power? Does he have any legislative chops? Can he be the deal maker that he says he's going to be? And lost to me in the last 2 or 3 weeks is who is actually in the inner circle now. I mean, do you know that, John? Who is he listening to now?
Yeah. I mean, it has been from the very beginning a really deeply divided White House, because he is a non-ideological guy. Trump is not really a Republican in any meaningful sense, and he's not, you know, for years he was a Democrat. He contributed to Democrats. His main defining feature is that he doesn't really have a political philosophy. He's mostly transactional. He wants to win. He wants to cut deals. He doesn't really care what's in them. He just wants to get them cut, right? So within the White House, he's appointed this group of advisors who are not kind of all cut from the same cloth. So you've got a group of people who are populist, nationalist, hard-edged kind of political people. Steve Bannon represents maybe the most the emblematic one of those, but he's got a bunch of people underneath him who are kind of similar sort of fellows, right? The kind of like Breitbart wing of the White House, right? And then he's got his daughter and his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and Gary Cohn, the former head of Goldman Sachs, and Dina Powell, who's also a former Goldman Sachs person, has worked in previous administrations, who are moderate, cosmopolitan, kind of establishment figure, Steve Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, you know, another Goldman Sachs person. So there's like a wing of the White House the people in the Bannon wing refer to those other people as Democrats, and some of them are. Gary Cohn was a Democrat for his life. You know, and then you've got this much harder-edged kind of more doctrinaire Republican wing, conservative wing, I should say. And there's a push and pull that's defined the first 107 days or however many days we're at right now, 106 days. The push and pull between those factions has been bloody and intense and nasty. And Trump kind of vacillates between them on any given day. In the end, the people who can't get fired from that White House are Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner. Mm-hmm. They're his family. And in the end, I think, you know, if you were trying to do the long view of what the power politics look like inside the White House, you got to give that wing the greater likelihood of winning in more instances than not, just because he's very family centric and he not only can not fire them, but he does trust them more than anybody else, and those people who are associated with them are kind of gain power because they are seen as being part of the Jared Ivanka wing. And the other thing I'll say is that someone like Gary Cohn, someone like Steve Mnuchin, Trump really respects people who've made money. You know, he looks at Washington functionaries. He looks at his chief of staff, Reince Priebus, and he says, you know, like, who is this guy? You know, like, he looks like, I'm not trying to trash Reince Priebus, but he's, you know, the head of the RNC. That's not a real accomplishment in Donald Trump's mind. Gary Cohn's worth $350 million. That's a real accomplishment in Donald Trump's mind. And so, you know, some of the things that give people throw weight in the White House are people who have made some dough and accomplished some things in the private sector, because that is a metric that Trump really regards highly and that he respects.
This is great. John, thank you so very much. You should come into Chatter and sit with us for a couple of days.
Mr. Tony, I was just saying to one of your posse up there that literally there's almost nothing that would make me happier. I mean, literally almost nothing. I can think about two things, but that is like, it would be a pinnacle.
What are those?
Very cool. All right, so we're going to arrange that.
Maybe then you'd reach God status in your own household.
Yeah, right. Circus.
Four gods.
The season end on Circus is on Showtime on Sunday. The name of the great book, of course, is Game Change, and John Heilman is on TV all the time. Thank you, John.
Thank you, Tony.
That was really good.
Yeah.
That was really good. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back with email and jingles, and I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Oh, no. Another second round will be the funeral. Do they find that skating gets their feet cold? When the game gets started, try to score goals. Score goals. Big time in the regular season. Big time in the regular season. Each year it's the same old thing. Each year it's the same old thing. They can't even spell Stanley. They can't even spell Stanley. Are they ever gonna see round three? Do they know how to count to three? Who gets the blame here? Could be Trotsky. Just might be Ovi. Uh-oh. They make us lose our minds every season.
I just give up hoping. Caps keep on choking.
Brad Weiss.
Excellent.
Williamsburg, Virginia. Timely.
Showed some range.
Before we get into the mailbag, I want to say thanks to Washington Post movie critic Ann Hornaday, to our horse racing expert Andy Beyer, political writer John Heilemann for coming on the show today. I'd also like to thank our sponsors, MeUndies and Books. Please support them the way they support this podcast. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of The Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. And if you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. That's very nice. It is pouring. I mean, it is 9 o'clock in Washington, D.C., and it is pouring at the moment.
I know there's a flood waiting for me at my house.
Yeah, your house is flooded. I just want to get through this show in case it floods the chatter. From Bill Isaacson, I'm right now on a flight to New Orleans. I can report that in a positive sign for the world, American Airlines announced that they were overbooked by one seat and offered a $250 voucher and a ticket on a later flight for a volunteer to leave the plane.
No
chance.
There was
no taker. So they bumped the offer to $750 voucher, which caused an audible gasp and an immediate taker. In a bad sign from my world, my son Nick never reacted to this or suggested that $750
I wouldn't take it.
Was worth his time. Mike from Burke, Virginia. I'm intending to drop by Chatter for dinner soon. I've gotten great reports on the new cocktail menu, bourbon and cooking oil. The cooking oil, pina colada, and a flaming gin and tonic, where your bartender floats a puddle of cooking oil atop your gin and tonic sets it aflame.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. So disappointed that you guys just hook, line, and sinkered on that story yesterday.
Be real. Well,
25 gallons?
It can't be real.
Drink 25 gallons of water, you would die.
Can you prove that he didn't do it?
I cannot. He looked like, based on the picture, he looked like he might have it
in New York Times, hashtag sad. Back to Mike from Burke, Virginia. About the new sign. Are you having it handcrafted by elves at the North Pole? Because I don't know why you would announce the new name without the new signage. And yes, this is troubling to me as well.
Yes.
Because I don't want the Chad sign name. I want that to go away. From Joe Costa in Mount Airy, Maryland. Did one of the parent pranks involve putting their 17-year-old son on a pony and laughing uncontrollably in the background? Because that would have been gold, Jerry. Yes. From Brian Medina in Kennebunk, Maine. The person to whom I'm related by marriage and I have two dogs. One is a Springer Spaniel with an average size head, and the other is a Springer Spaniel mixed with a poodle, don't ask, that seems to have a small head. Our almost 4-year-old daughter, much like the Springer Spaniel, has an average sized head. Are we still talking about Kind bars? I tried one with blueberry the other day and it was pretty good. I will take a box of that. I'm sure this is in reaction to the fact that I think Chessie's head is abnormally large.
Yes, you've
I mean,
said
it's
that.
Like a dinosaur head.
I shared a picture of Chessie with her Frisbees yesterday, and like people were commenting that it looks like a normal head. It's proportional to the
dog. It's a Mongo dog.
Big head dog.
I think it's a really large-headed dog, is what I think.
Maybe the dogs that you've buried have had small heads.
Yeah. That's actually probably a good
point.
They've
had smaller bodies, too. Pete in Pensacola, Florida. I'll take a ham, egg, and cheese on a toasted onion bagel, a side of home fries, black coffee, and a large orange juice. Hold the apple slices. You do deliver, right? No, but if you're in Washington and you want to come to Chatter for breakfast, we're opening at 8 in the morning, and an amount of water just poured down the outside atrium windows to such a degree that I thought the street would be washed away.
It's the end of days.
Matt Hall from Traverse City, Michigan, got an idea for a new item for the Chatter menu. How about right below Wilbon's Chili, you add Roman's Bowl of Lard? Sure, it sounds gross, but who knows? And it actually costs you nothing. Think about it. We have another one from Mike from Burke, Virginia. And I always like his emails because he hates me. Heard that some
of the
online reviews of Chatter are not kind. Do not fret. I recalled what Don Imus once said when his show was put on a new radio station and there were unhappy callers to the station. Imus pointed out that the people who were listening to the radio station before they added the Imus show presumably liked what the station was providing or they wouldn't have been listening. The change to them was unwelcome and it would take time for the new happy and hopefully more numerous listeners to show up. All that things seems, in time, Mr. Tony.
Seems reasonable. All
very philosophical.
I thought that was really good. Justin Johnson, Arlington, Virginia. I really don't know what any of my neighbors do, but the other day after I came in from walking my dogs, someone who lives in my building shared an elevator with me in silence all the way to the 12th floor. The doors opened, he stepped out, turned back, bent down to my dogs, and said, bye-bye, little guys, before walking away. I hate people like that. I think we all share that. I mean, you know, why do you talk to the dogs like that? I mean,
bye-bye, little guys?
Are my dogs talking to you?
Bigger issue, say hello to someone in an elevator.
You should say
yes.
Hello.
Yeah. Nobody put the phone it. Down.
Do I?
You've got about, I don't know, 10 seconds or so.
It's not enough. Right, I've got Steve the Sycophant, and it's very good. It's just
we can go.
No.
Or not.
We're gonna bounce. Stan Barrett says, if you're out on your bike, everyone at night in this rain, do wear white
and a poncho.
You know what? Get me out of here.
Thank you. till I die. And can you tell me why they all still bother me? Cause they got their own agenda tailor-made for me. I need a mental intervention cause I don't believe that I can change or rearrange the shit that bothers me at all. Yeah, you gotta wake up, you gotta make it up as you go along. You gotta fake it, but don't take it. It'll be alright if you can hang on tight. Hey, it's just another day. It's the same old thing that happened yesterday. Hey, I'm pissing all away. It's the same old thing, getting by until I die. All this time, it's been complaining, but it got me nowhere. I didn't change at all. I'm sick of trying just to turn it all inside and out. And I get up so they can push me right back down on my face. I won't compromise what's in my head, but on my sleeve it's something I forgot about.
Something I forgot about.
Hey, it's just another day.